From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. That's the sound of a remotely controlled aircraft, a drone small enough to fit into a backpack. It can peer into a world some people don't want you to see. The drone hovers over the jungle near the Gulf of Fonseca in southern El Salvador. It buzzes like a giant mosquito, then zips off.
There it goes.
At the controls are two young Americans. Reporter Sarah Blasky and photojournalist Ben Feibelman.
That's some jungle.
They're crouching low in the jungle's thick vegetation near the water's edge, trying to keep a low profile.
All right, 100 meters. See it? Can you see it?
No, I don't see anything.
The drone moves out over the water.
I'm going to see if I can speed this thing up. Sport mode, got it. All right, there we go. Wow.
I can hear it.
Sarah and Ben track its video feed on a small screen.
That's the big port over there.
Okay.
They're looking for a ship. It has a Chinese name, a Vietnamese crew, and lucrative cargo. Sharks and their fins. Shark fin soup is a status symbol in some Asian countries. A single bowl can go for $100 or more. For the past decade, there's been a global campaign to end the trade in shark fins. But in Central America, despite new regulations, shark exports are on the rise. Some species, like the hammerhead, are being pushed to the brink of extinction. Sarah spent years investigating the shark trade, traveling up and down the west coast of Central America to figure out who's profiting from this destruction. What she found is a story that goes way beyond shark fishing. We pick up the journey before Sarah and Ben find themselves launching that drone in the Salvadoran jungle, about 400 miles south in Costa Rica.
The ocean's right there to our left.
Is this a little like isthmus out to an island, a peninsula or something?
This is the peninsula.
Oh. Okay.
It's a tiny, tiny little finger of land that sticks off of the Pacific coast.
Ben and I are driving into Punta Arenas, the shark fishing capital of Central America. It's home to multi-million dollar companies that export shark fins.
We passed it.
More shark blood has been shed in this town than any other place in the region. I'm here to confront the owners of the oldest and biggest shark company around.
I'm not sure if this is one way.
We'll find out shortly.
Those companies are hidden behind high walls and covered docks. But if you know where to look, you can still catch a glimpse.
Those are fins.
Right.
This is Ben's first time here, and sometimes he's a bit unfiltered.
I don't know about sharks, but that's a fin. I can see that.
Yeah, those are fins.
Ben's an ex-Marine, which makes him a good reporting partner here. The Costa Rican National Police warned me that reporting on this industry can be dangerous. And I learned that some of the boats are involved in poaching, drug running, and human trafficking. Punta Arenas used to be a sleepy port town, with little boats fishing close to shore. Then in the 1980s, commercial fishing changed.
We live with our back towards the sea. We have that huge resource. And then the shark fin craze starts happening in Costa Rica. This was a huge party.
Costa Rican conservationist Randall Arauz says the shark fin craze was sparked by the arrival of longliners, a type of vessel that can pull in thousands of fish at a time. It was a delegation of fishing experts from Taiwan that brought them to Costa Rica. Some never went home.
And they started the whole shark fin industry.
In Punta Arenas, Taiwanese fishermen started businesses. They established the biggest longlining fleets in Central America. And Randall suspected they were wiping out endangered sea life.
So a friend of mine, he got a job on a longline boat in 1997 as a cook.
He gave his friend a video camera.
And he was acting like it was a family video. Since he was from Punta Arenas, he knew the fishermen. So he'd walk around, hey man, say hi to the camera, you know. So they all let their guard down.
In the grainy VHS footage, you see fishermen dragging in all sorts of creatures onto deck. Sea lions, giant turtles, and at the very end, a blue shark. It's still alive, gurgling as the crew slices off its fins. Watching the creature writhe as huge chunks of flesh are hacked off its body, I have to fight the urge to throw up. Then, fishermen kick the shark overboard, back into the ocean to die. This way, they fill up the ship's freezers with only the most valuable part of the shark. And this practice has led to massive overfishing.
I saw that and I was like, what the hell?
this was some of the first footage people had ever seen of a shark being finned alive. It helped spark outrage and international bans on hacking off fins from live sharks. Costa Rica also outlawed live finning and imposed other restrictions. But catching sharks and exporting fins, that's still legal. So there's still money to be made here.
So it looks like a bunker. It looks like a...
Friggin' embassy.
Yeah, it looks like an embassy, exactly.
Ben and I arrive at a huge compound surrounded by tall, sand-colored walls. This is the headquarters for the Wong Group. Documents indicate its fleet is responsible for more than 60,000 shark deaths a year. The dock's blocked by a thick metal gate that a guard opens for us.
Buenos días. ¿Se encuentra el señor Wong? Sí.
We're here to meet Fabio Wong. He's the son of one of those Taiwanese fishing experts who came to Punta Arenas back in the 1980s. Randall calls Fabio the godfather of shark fishing in the region, and I've been trying to nail down an interview with him for months. He's finally agreed, but only after I've told him I've uncovered documents about him in the Panama Papers. They've helped me figure out that he and his brothers seem to be operating a business behind a bunch of shell companies. With shark populations in steep decline, the Wong Group is the only company we found in Central America that has its hands in every part of the supply chain. That's what I'm here to confront Fabio about.
Ready?
Yeah.
He greets us at the entrance, wearing jeans and a blue polo shirt.
Buenos días. ¿Cómo le va, señor? Todo bien. Él se llama Ben.
Fabio puts on a bit of a show, walking me through a huge empty freezer and barren warehouse.
This is really a huge operation, but mostly empty at this point.
Then we walk towards six rusting longliners tied up at his dock. Fabio tells me the boats aren't working, and neither is he. He says he's folded, closed up shop.
Donde este actualmente ya no está en función. Vamos.
We move to a big echoey room. We sit beside each other at a huge table. That's where I show him those documents I've brought along.
Por ejemplo,
I point to one ship as an example.
Hung Chi Fu, sin número?
The Hung Chi Fu.
No tengo conocimiento sobre eso, pero si está indicando.
But Fabio keeps telling me the same thing, that the family business broke up, the fleet left, and he doesn't know what happened to it. What Fabio's saying doesn't add up. The records I've uncovered show he and his brothers are still the owners, and that they're still fishing. But where? Ben and I go see someone who might have some answers.
We're here in a small dock down a dirt road at a dock called Mesita, where Sergio rents a space for his boat.
Sergio Soto Peña used to work for the Wong Group. He's only in his 30s, but already he's spent more than two decades shark fishing. He walks us towards one of his boats, the Tarzan 6.
Hola. ¿Todo bien?
Like other international longliners, most of the space is taken up with giant freezers. The whole crew sleeps in a tiny nook the size of a closet. The first thing we see on board is a huge reel, spooled tight with fishing line, hooked up to a giant winch. The lines on these boats stretch for miles, fitted with thousands of steel hooks.
That's a long line right there. De cuantos kilómetros es uno de esos, o millas? That's about a 50-mile long line. Look how thick that is.
Sergio says he follows the law. He flies a Costa Rican flag, doesn't cut fins from live sharks, and doesn't sell endangered species like hammerheads. He says following those laws cuts into profits, and thinks that has a lot to do with why Fabio left.
I think it's because he didn't want to follow regulations, because fishing is still happening out there, and there are still sharks.
Sergio says the Wong boats are still fishing sharks. They fly the flag of Belize, a country widely criticized for failing to enforce maritime laws, and they stick to international waters, staying at sea for months at a time. And they do that, Sergio says, by transferring their catch to another boat that then delivers the sharks to remote ports. These types of transfers are illegal in Costa Rica without a special permit.
You see that a lot in international waters. We have regulations in Costa Rica, but who regulates those people?
Then Sergio tells me something I don't expect, He says it's not just sharks and overfishing. For the Wong ships to stay out at sea so long, they rely on cheap labor. Migrants from Asia who work under terrible conditions.
The captain is their owner. To me, it's modern-day slavery.
Slavery and human trafficking are well documented in the fishing and seafood industry. It turns out that local prosecutors once investigated the Wongs for trafficking migrant workers from Asia. But they couldn't bring a case because the crew wouldn't testify. I started circling back to my sources, and almost everyone seemed to have a story about the crews on those Wong vessels. Randall Arouse, the conservationist behind that shark fin video, says out in international waters, there's no real oversight.
We need some kind of rules, but there are no rules right now at the high seas.
Overfishing, human trafficking, to really know what's going on, I need to find those boats.
How do you find a boat in the Pacific that doesn't want to be found?
Well, that's the difficult part. Many times the only thing we can rely on to see these boats is satellite telemetry, but then how can you identify it? So it's working on the high seas does pose a lot of problems.
But no boat can stay at sea forever. It has to come into port somewhere at some time. After months of searching, we get really, really lucky. A source tells me a Wong vessel might be offloading sharks in southern El Salvador. 3 days later, Ben and I are there. We're hiking along the Gulf of Fonseca, a spot where the dense jungle meets the water.
One thing I wish we had is a machete.
Yeah, same thought.
Earlier, we'd tried to get into a small private port in the town of La Union. It's protected by huge walls and security guards who wouldn't let us in. So instead, we're trying to get close enough to launch a drone to try to help find the ship. It's a last resort, the only way we're going to get a look at what's happening in that port.
I need to go to the gym.
A boat passes. Its occupants wave and I wave back. Ben doesn't.
Those interactions down to a minimum.
Do you think that's a bad idea?
Yeah. I mean, there's gringo and then there's f***ing spy.
He has a point. In just the short time we've been here, we've been followed around town and pulled over at gunpoint by police wanting to know what we're up to. This area in particular is known for drugs and gangs, and it's not the kind of place you want to get caught snooping. So we move further into the jungle.
Yeah, we should have stayed on the rocks.
No.
There's no way through.
We don't need a way through, we just need a way up.
Do we have a way up?
Look up.
We are in the smallest clearing in the jungle I have ever seen. This
probably
doesn't look like a way up to me, but
10 feet wide. This is a great place unless, let me check down by the water.
Ben positions the drone carefully. There are branches and vines everywhere.
And we are.
There it goes.
We launch the drone out over the Gulf and then double back toward the port, making sure to keep a legal flight path.
Okay, and the plan is we're going to go to a really high altitude so that we can see everything, kind of like U-2 spy planes of old.
Looking through a small video feed, we zero in on the port.
There it is.
That's it.
A longliner. It's flying the Belize flag, and there's a name written on the side.
What's it say?
You can read it.
What's it say?
It says... Get a little bit closer.
It says Hung Chi Fu.
Hung Chi Fu.
Doesn't it?
Hung Chi Fu.
Hung Chi Fu. The boat Fabio Wong said he knew nothing about.
All right, we're getting out of here.
Okay, let's go.
So the fleet is still active and still bringing in lots of sharks. And I've confirmed through ship registries that the Hung Chi Fu is owned by Fabio's brother and managed through the Wong Group in Costa Rica. But what about the crew and those trafficking allegations?
La Union port number 7729. Okay, here we go. Please answer.
To get some answers, I call a guy named Pablo. I learned he manages the Hung Chi Fu while it's in port.
Hola.
Hola, buenas.
My conversation with Pablo goes like this. He says he can't give me access to the boat or crew since he's not the owner. So I ask him who is. Pablo dodges and says the Wong group. Fabio? I ask. He says yes. Then his tone shifts. He tells me words out around town that I'm looking for him. Why so many questions? What am I really after? All of this makes me really nervous.
That wasn't good.
Why?
I don't think that we're safe here anymore.
Then the clock's ticking.
I don't know who might be watching us. Before we came here, Ben and I made a deal. We really wanted to find the boat, but given the dangers, we'd get out of town at the first sign of trouble. And to me, Pablo's reaction is trouble. But we have one thing left to do. We've just landed an official tour of the port, and we want to make one last shot at getting to the crew. I hear they only speak Vietnamese, so I write a note and have it translated. I keep it simple in case the captain sees it. I say I have questions about the Hung Chi Phu and tell them how they can contact me. The next day, it's 100 degrees when Ben and I tour the port. It looks like a big parking lot with a couple of metal warehouses. As we round one of the buildings, we run straight into a man getting off the Hung Chi Phu. He's young, thin, wearing a pink shirt that looks stiff from months of washing it in seawater.
Hi, ¿cómo está?
I try English and Spanish, the only two languages I've got.
Hola, ¿hablas español?
No, es de Vietnam.
De Vietnam, eh?
Yeah.
Our guide laughs at me when the young man doesn't seem to understand what I'm saying. Then I reach into my purse and pull out the note. When he unfolds it and sees it's written in Vietnamese, his eyes widen. Quickly, he walks away, stuffing the note in his pocket. And then Ben and I honor our deal, and we leave. The note gets passed around. Within a week, crew members start messaging me. They say conditions on the ships are terrible and that some want to get off, but they can't.
When we come back, Sarah helps describe one particularly chilling message. It says, "Help me." That's coming up on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.